Sorry, guys. I had trouble getting on my own bridge line. Thank you all very much for the questions and comments that you sent, the kind words. I wanted to begin with a question that is a first for me, and I thought it would be interesting to see if it works for you. I appreciate all the questions, and I'm incorporating them in, and again, when you follow the outline with what I say, it's going to roughly conform to the outline, but I'll depart from that to wrap in the discussion. But here's the question. Any wellness breakthroughs, especially from neuroscience, wow us with something? Well, now, I always try to wow you guys, but here's a focused effort of something that immediately came to mind from a piece I'd saved from a Sunday New York Times article. David Linden is a professor of neuroscience at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He was given an 18-month prognosis before the remaining aspects of a huge mass removed from his heart would cause him to die. So he had planned his life to be 18 more months, but now this is in the genre of mind-body medicine. Linden was urged to meditate, breathe mindfully, pray, and exercise. He was, as a scientist, even as a neuroscientist and professor of neuroscience, skeptical of explanations offered for the effectiveness of mind-body medicine with vague terms like energy flow and resonance. His dad, a very avant-garde for the old school of psychoanalysts, incorporated what we now know in neuroscience in the discussions that he had with him. He would talk about as his dad was a psychoanalyst, how he engaged in discussion about what could potentially cure him. And he was talking not just about catharsis and revisiting stories, but how this works by subtly changing the function of the brain. Practices like meditation, exercise, they act through the mind-body connection and change the biology of both. For example, he followed his dad's advice, even as a professor of neuroscience, by focused breathing to regulate regions of his brain that couple pain with negative emotional tones. He could attenuate his pain from the cancer by the electrical signals by his focus conveyed from breathing centers for emotional pain. This is all in an article in the New York Times last year. Can I fight cancer with mere thought? A neuroscientist considers why his cancer has stopped growing. Biologically, we know the brain communicates with the body by nerve fibers releasing neurotransmitters at the same time to cancer cells as well. So neuroscience has shown that specific types of cancer actually receive nerve fibers for signals originating in the brain and conducted by electrical chemical signals. Now this includes lungs, skin, breast, prostate, all parts of the body. Certain signals can slow cancer progression. At this point, he's alive and well. He has exceeded his projected time remaining by fivefold already and is doing great and is believing that the discussions with his dad and his focused efforts in this area and that we've been studying about and talking about really have saved his life. So, he's written some books I'd highly recommend for you guys. One is The Accidental Mind, and the last is The Compass of Pleasure. And these are applications of neuroscience to our own well-being and understanding the combination of mind, brain, body, wellness. So that's what I got. I hope it was a little bit of a wow and maybe sort of met expectation. Anything else you'd like to talk about or discuss, if you dare, before we before we talk about what we're supposed to be talking about from the outline and the plan, we're going to be talking about step five, only step five today, to look at that in the roadmap process. Anything else
you want to add or ask?
Did I hear someone and talk over you? Go ahead.
Rosemary, I had a question.
Welcome.
Will you send us those book titles and that where we can get that article that you're talking about?
Sure. Sure.
Okay.
I'll be happy.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
This is Marcia Dixon.
I'm sorry. This is
Marcia Dixon.
Wait. Go ahead.
Hi.
Welcome.
I was listening to you with the neuroscience and stuff, and that was one of the things that my neurologist and my oncologist told me with cancer.
Oh.
Both oncologists, they said that I had a better rate of recovery because of my personality and because of the way I viewed life and because of my faith.
That's great, and congratulations. And I think there's mm-hmm. more and more to support that and mm-hmm. what we know now about what focused attention and mindfulness meditation can do
mm-hmm.
and how
right.
that enhances the immune system. Even more recently, when you do a mindfulness meditation and end it with a gratitude, that alone enhances two different immunoglobulins for greater resilience in your immune system. So
right.
I think, thank you for mentioning. Anything else you wanted to add to that?
Well, I was going to say the meditation really helped, because my meditation was, since my faith is Christ, my meditation was through the word and through the songs. And so they told me that this was, and I was doing nutritional health coaching at the time. So I was going through those meditation things too.
That's great.
So they were saying that because of all of that, and because of, they even added because of the herbal things that I was taking, it made my struggle with chemo and stuff a whole lot easier than most people that they had seen.
Terrific. That's a very proactive approach. And I think those combinations can be very powerful. Thank you for making
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I'm 3 years out now.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm 3 years out now.
Wow. Okay. That's great. Super. Any other comment or question briefly?
This is Janet. I just wanted to throw out a couple books that I'm reading on neuroplasticity that I started reading several years ago, and I just keep reading them because it's so much information. There are two books by Norman Doidge, Doidge.
Yes. Uh-huh.
One of them is The Brain That Changes Itself, and the other one is The Brain's Way of Healing, and I'll stick those in an email to you. I mean, they're phenomenal. I work with disabled people, or I coach them, and I've recommended these books to them, and it's just astounding how they find little strategies, try them out, some stuff works, uh-huh. some stuff doesn't, but the hope that it gives them just changes their attitude completely.
That's great. Thank you for mentioning that and sharing that. And I'll forward those to our group as well.
Thank you.
So was there another comment or question? Jot down anything you want to explore or talk a little bit more about or discuss. Let's plan, if you're game, to add on 15 minutes at the end of our final seminar next time at the top of the hour to add on some minutes there for discussion, for kind of an open mic for things that you may want to discuss or talk about that or go back to that we didn't spend enough time on, just so we can have a discussion there and specifically of application for you and for coaching. So if you can, be ready to add to our time next time for an open discussion. So I'm going to put us on lecture mode And I think we'll have a little bit of time at the end if there are any clarifications or questions. So hold on. Okay, part of my difficulty in getting into the bridge line is that I don't have the lecture mode option, so I'm going to ask you guys to be unusually quiet. If you'll each mute star six, I'll figure out what's going on with the bridge line, but if you'll mute star six and then at the end come back to discuss. So we're going to talk about MAP wellness strategies, step five. Remember, we've talked about the first four steps to recognize authorship of your wellness story, to own your story, to assess the plot and storylines, and to decide what to change. And this is the application, then, to map those strategies, to map the changes. So as we discuss this, there are a couple of workbook exercises. I meant to ask you guys, are any of you finding the workbook exercises and tools beneficial? Here are two that apply specifically that if you have time, I'd suggest you look at. 14 steps to edit your story. Not as complicated as it sounds. That's on page 2.12. And 5 steps to revise a storyline. And that's really what the whole roadmap process is, the acronym of the 7 steps to really understand the algorithms that you operate on, the thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and understanding them to be able to deconstruct your story to see what you want to focus on to change or to have a systematic way to create both change and a new story. Now, as many refugees from therapy know, insight and understanding alone are not enough to replace an old story. You can come to the end of the old story, but what are you going to do then? How many people do you know who can tell you all there is to know about something they're struggling with? They're experts on diet, weight, nutrition, yet they haven't changed. Many years ago, when I treated severe anorexics in a hospital setting, they each knew more about food and nutrition than my entire treatment team of experts and me. So underlying causes are always present for any problem, often complex, multi-determined causes. But a mentor coaching approach is to not go back into the past and that pathway in the brain to etch it further, but to use causes, feelings, history, to use those algorithms only as information to focus on now and next. At times, simply doing what is currently effective dissolves barriers because you create the next step instead of the obstacle. And we need a system for challenging situations when we're least likely to make good choices, when it's emotionally charged for decisions that are really difficult or rare or unprecedented, ones that we may not get feedback on, where we may have trouble translating into understandable terms, or when someone persists, us or our clients, in reentering an old story. Now, often, and I'll bet each of you has seen this, what may look like resistance for your client may simply be not knowing what the next step is. And that's what we do in coaching, to create change as the beginning of a new story, to focus on the system, not just the result. So there are 6 crucial elements to systematically understand and map change. So this is important, I believe, as an element of really understanding the process of what we're facilitating and being a catalyst for in mentor coaching. One is to regulate states of mind. And remember, states of mind are like software programs. They're a mind-body state that determines how we perceive and how we process information and how we respond. We each have a number of different states of mind: relaxation, alertness, anxiety, anger, centered attention. A key element is to be aware of our different states of mind and know which state works best for what purpose. You know, for example, creative writing versus editing. Two very different parts of the brain, two different states. So when someone is in an emotional state, they may be, in an extreme instance, marooned in their right brain, the feeling intuitive brain, to make it all too simple. The emotional brain can hijack the intellectual logical brain and hold it hostage. So, let's look at how to regulate states of mind. This is a crucial aspect, and I believe one of the, if not the most fundamental thing that we can do with our clients is to help them regulate a state of mind to get grounded and centered, to then be able to self-reflect and consider in a collaborative mode how to move forward. The regulation of states of mind may in itself be the initial collaboration. So, what do these people have in common? John Belushi, Marilyn Monroe, Elvis Presley, Janis Joplin, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Kurt Cobain. They never learned the critical success strategy of managing their states of mind. And attempting to use drugs, alcohol, or some other addictive substance or process to regulate a state of mind and manage emotion can be in itself a compromise. Your state of mind, the particular software program you use, determines the meaning you attach to a stimulus. The meaning you attach then determines your behavior. So the state of mind determines the meaning we attach. The meaning determines behavior. So by changing your state of mind, you can change your behavior. Initially, getting grounded and centered so that you have access to all of the information in all of your brain, all of the software programs, to choose the one that fits. And there are two primary ways to regulate your state of mind: physiology and focus. Physiology, how you use your body to change your biochemistry: relaxation, deep breathing, meditation. The other aspect, focus. What and how you focus. From quantum physics and brain science, we know this. You get what you focus on, not what you want. Focus aligns the energy field of your brain. What you focus on, what you pay attention to, determines your state of mind. And the state of mind determines the meaning you attach. So your power is in your focus. So this is the initial aspect that we touched on earlier about framing. Perhaps the biggest challenge and the biggest opportunity is how we frame what we consider. We determine the perception and the meaning that we attach. We decide what to focus on and what we decide to do. If the framework is problem, that boots up a particular mindset. If it's opportunity, then we proceed in a different way. So, once again, your brain does not know the difference between anxiety and excitement. So how you frame what you're experiencing will determine the mindset you use to boot it up. You frame it as anxiety, you head one direction. Danger, better head for cover, protect yourself. If you frame it as challenge, as opportunity, as excitement, then you're looking at how new and different to take a step even into the unknown to actually engage that in a different way. So two very different frameworks, two directions, and two different ways of looking at it. So what that can mean practically, your client says, well, you know, let me tell you about this problem. That's where I might say, since I've already asked at the beginning of work with each mentor coaching client, if I may interrupt them and give them the permission to interrupt me, and many of you guys who have trained with me knows how annoying that can be at times, let's look at the possibility here. What's the challenge? What's the opportunity? Now, that's different because that's a step into the unknown. And remember, the error detection mechanism of the brain and your mind software that doesn't have a pre-planned route for this are going to say, that's not easy. That's what you want to collaboratively stick with your client about, to appreciate that any step into the new, the different, the unknown is attendant with some kind of trepidation. So it may be that an empathic resonance can be helpful. I know this is not comfortable, but what's the opportunity here to look at the challenge? So what and how you focus on can make a difference. And think about how the framework determines a state of mind to consider collaboratively engage. You have the framework of collaborative engagement with the client, and then you have the idea of looking at possibility and creating a system, a map, beginning in the simplest way possible with the next step and a destination. That's the simple coaching model. So at times, asking effective questions can change your state of mind or determine your state of mind. This is the power of focus. Let me tell you a brief example. I was invited by a buddy of mine who does a Vistage group, the mastermind group for CEOs and business owners, because there were two of her members. One was the CEO of a company, another was a owner of a company, and both of them, in a very short period of time, had significant tragedies in their business, and it was even months later affecting them and their people. So I simply made the recommendation that they write down. I asked them, what's the first thing you think of when you wake up? And both of them said, what can go wrong today, all the negative stuff. And sure enough, it's kind of mushroomed into avoidance of bad things that could happen, basically. So I made a very simple suggestion, and all of them looked at me like, where does this simple guy come? I suggested that they write down three questions before they go to bed at night, sometime during the day, or at least before they go to bed at night, that would put them in an empowered state of mind, that would be positive, engaging, and empowering, to put them in a very positive state of mind, and then to answer those three questions first thing when they wake up, as soon as they turn their bedside lamp on. Because we're always asking ourselves questions. They had both said first thing they think of is, avoidance of something bad, and that determined the framework. You get what you focus on. So you're focusing on avoiding something bad, you're going to get something bad. At least the mindset is going to direct you. So I got a follow-up from my buddy who heads the Vistage group at their next month meeting, that in both cases, they and the people that were all downstream from them all benefited from that, even though they never, the people who were in their orbit or in their organization never knew why, but these two people knew why. They knew that their mindset had determined how they engaged as soon as their feet hit the floor in the morning, as well as throughout the day and everyone they came in contact with. It's an application of how contagious energy fields are. The best mentors, leaders, and teachers are the ones who ask the best questions to get us to use our own resources. Asking effective questions determines your state of mind. This is your power of focus. People thought Goliath was too big to hit. David asked a little bit of a different question. If he's that big, how could I miss? Starbucks founder Howard Schultz didn't ask if people want to buy a cup of coffee or latte, but he asked, do you want a concept of community, a third place between home and work? Try this as your homework. write down three questions that put you in a peak state as you answer them. Each morning, answer these three empowering questions and feel the answer. Remember, you're already asking questions. This just changes the focus to constantly and consistently engineer these questions that begin your day and frame your day. Remember how you get up and stub your toe? The next 5 hours are bad. So this can be a way to focus. So the mantra of the cue, the focus, the physiology, I'm not going to spend time going over this, but look at the very bottom of my website, Master States of Mind, is a link for a free webinar. It's 30 minutes, and it elaborates more on this than we're able to now. Look at that webinar if you have a chance, and the illustration of the new coach at University of Southern Utah, whose team was dead last in free shot percentage, 217 out of 217, and he instituted a very simple 3 to 4 second mantra when they got to the free shot line in practice, and after 2 years, they were first in their division nationwide. So think about that if you have time. I think you'll find it interesting and more of an elaboration about what we're talking about here. The number two element to map change is an element of what we've talked about. The power is in the focus. Thoughts have a frequency, an energy field. Focus selects a frequency. It's like all the channels of radio or satellite TV are available. We choose the channel, the frequency we want, out of thousands of possibilities. We each transmit and receive a frequency through our thoughts. So if you want to change something in your life, change the frequency, the channel. Change your thoughts. Now, the bad news, if you think about what you don't want, it keeps showing up over and over. Because we know this from quantum mechanics. The quantum Zeno effect says the mental act of attention activates and holds in place brain circuitry. With consistent focus and repetition, these chemical links actually become stable changes in the brain structure. The brain rewires. So make sure it's a positive focus, because your unconscious can't tell the difference between negative or positive, just the focus. And this is a brain explanation for why a solution focus is more effective than a problem focus. The brain connections literally become mind maps and can influence the reality that we perceive, process, and create. So new neuronal networks and pathways are created when we focus on solutions. The already existing circuitry is further etched when you focus on existing problems. This is how you can get stuck in limiting assumptions or false assumptions instead of simply looking at what you want to focus on, where you want to go. Neuroscience validates the reality that it's not understanding the source of our thoughts that's most beneficial, but a focus on the awareness of choice and a systematic engagement. Now, I'm sure you're familiar with the law of attraction that's really based in neuroscience. There's an article on my website that elaborates just a bit about that. Under the articles tab. So here's a summary to save you some time. and you guys know this. If you lay a nail and a paper clip side by side, nothing happens. When you take a magnet and stroke the nail several times from head to point, it becomes a magnet and you can pick up the paper clip. Well, the simple reason, the molecules of the nail are aligned in the same direction. Polarities all are unify. Same with your energy field. When all of you is going the same direction and focused, you have power. Now, in the film The Secret, I know you guys have seen this or listened to it. The adage is ask, believe, receive, as if that's the law of attraction. Now, two of those are right. The law of attraction won't give you what you want. It's not a passive manner of receiving it. It will give you the energy to sustain the process to create what you want. It will not send a Brinks truck up your driveway or align the lotto balls for you. Trust me on that. You don't have to waste it. But you can align your internal molecules by focus and purpose to point to specific goals. It's a way to use your power to write the story you want. So instead of ask, believe, receive, consider this, the ABCs. Ask, believe, create. Now, my favorite grandmother offered her critique of the film The Secret 5 decades before it was released. She said, "Witches don't wash dishes." Now, the paradox is that we do not attract what we want. We attract what we focus on. Everybody wants more money, so wanting is not the key to having it. Focusing on scarcity attracts scarcity. Focusing on prosperity aligns your energy field to systematically pursue prosperity. So you need a focus and a system. And remember, once again, your unconscious doesn't register positive or negative, just the focus. It's like a print or a negative in the old school of photography is the same image. Your unconscious is that image. The power of focus, whatever you attend to and focus on, you align yourself to create. So be sure you focus on the right thing. I want to get out of debt. Focuses on debt. I want to lose weight. Focuses on weight. It's not the realignment. Here's one that's kept a lot of dry cleaners busy. I want to be really careful and not spill something on this new outfit. Now, Dr. Joseph Murray put it really succinctly. Your subconscious mind does not argue with you. It accepts what your conscious mind decrees. If you say, "I can't afford it," your subconscious mind works to make it true. So notice which people worry about illness. Who talks about pains or disorders? The people who are afraid of getting sick are the ones who get sick most of the time. What you worry about happens because you focus on it. So, put energy into what you want. See, every one of these are coachable moments. And here's a coaching intervention. Put energy into what you want. Focus on possibilities instead of problems. Desires instead of obstacles. To fight something is to engage it, to add energy to it. This creates resistance. When you focus on what you don't want falls away, kind of like your lap when you get up to walk. The energy we're talking about now is not the energy of stamina, like in tired versus refreshed, but that of energy field that's invisible, but it's a very real phenomenon. And think about how you can immediately tell when you have a read with your energy field of someone else's, who's, you immediately know if they're warm and inviting, cold or stay away, charismatic, energetic. Now, quantum physics offers us still another paradigm. In addition to our individual energy field, there's a collective field, and you can tap into and resonate with this field, the quantum field of possibility. Einstein called this a unified field theory. Basically, the human mind and body, each person is a bundle of energy that interacts with the energy field of another or the larger energy field of a group. This is how we read people, how we focus our choices, how we can individually determine the flow of our future. So how do you tap into this collective field? When you're grounded and centered, these are physics terms, grounded and centered. When you're grounded and centered with yourself, it can create an awareness, an openness, and access to all aspects of your brain, especially to intuition, and can create synchronicity. And a popular term in performance neuroscience is in the zone. We can talk about that more in discussion if you're interested. Your thoughts, let me say that differently. Your choices actually set this flow into motion, just as other choices can cause derailment of this process. Like we talked about, you set your day in motion when you wake up, and the first thought you have, that can usually be traced, when it's positive, to a empowering or positive thought. If it's negative, it can be an immediate derailment. The law of attraction now is neutral and impersonal. It works easily and quickly, equally for both positive and negative thoughts, good or bad. You keep coming back to it. If you run away from it, you attract what you resist, because it's an engagement with focused emotion. That's important. The most important principle is to focus on what you do want rather than what you don't want. Because if you focus on what you don't want, boom, you have an immediate engagement with what you don't want, and your unconscious is striving to make it true. Most focus now is outside awareness. Remember, we talked early about 90 to 95% of our operating system is unconscious. So the challenge is to target consciously and systematically the specific outcomes you want. So this may be an awareness that increases as you're aware of the things that you may negatively focus on or come back to that can be limiting, to immediately think about what you do want instead and realign your focus. Be specific about what you don't want. Be specific about what you do want, not just what you don't want in disguise. So let's do an articulate your unconscious exercise. And if you'll stay on mute for this one, star six or your mute button, do this test to see how it works. Follow each statement that I make with "your wish is my command." That will be your response to what I say. Your wish is my command. I'm tired. I'm late. I'm overweight. I just exercised. I'm eating healthily all day. I'm excited about what I'm going to do next. Think about your experience of the first three, your experience of the last three. Your statement, your focus, immediately boots up a mindset of certain experiences. And thinking in this way is not magical. It can require discipline. That's why most people don't have spectacular results. So, a couple of quotes. William James, the father of American psychology, said, "Wisdom is learning what to overlook." And you've heard me quote my favorite grandmother, and I think you've heard me do this quote, my last book on performance neuroscience with my agent in New York has this dedication to her with this quote: if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. So, a final vignette on focus. One evening, an elder Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It's anger, envy, jealousy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, resentment, inferiority, superiority. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, and compassion." Grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" And the old Cherokee simply said, "The one you feed." 3, visualize change. There's an exercise in the workbook on the new art and the old science of visualization. It's about the neuroscience of visualization to rewire your brain and the mind software revision of creating affirmations that support the story of your visualization. The prototype situation here, the prototype study, and there have been many way more sophisticated, basketball players at Ohio State were divided into three groups to practice shooting free throws. You know it was before the current March Madness. Because one group, no practice for a month. Another group, 30 minutes of practice daily at free throws. The third group, they practiced imagining shooting perfect free throws, nothing but net, for at least 5 minutes daily for 30 days. At the end of 30 days, they were tested. The first group, no practice, 0% improvement. The second group, actual practice, 30 minutes daily, 24% improvement. The third group, practice by visualization only, 23% improvement. Now, subsequent studies have shown a significantly higher percentage of the visualization only because there's nothing to correct for. Because every time you miss a shot, you have to kind of self-correct and do it. When it's nothing but net, you're wiring that in your brain. So it's not that practice makes perfect. It's only perfect practice makes perfect performance, because every time you do something wrong, you're wiring it in your brain. So that's where the whole neuroscience of performance and deliberate practice and performance and being in that zone, creating a mindset where it becomes instinctual and it becomes a part of what you do without even having to consciously decide. So one possibility, and you've done this, I would imagine, with yourself or with clients, create a vision. And look at maybe, if you have time, a systematic way, and there are others, about creating a vision. Then look back to see the path to get there. The most common mistake is having a vague sketch rather than a vision. So this is something that I think, and the application here for wellness. Here's a focus and visualization exercise for you to do to see where you are on this. Focus on the weight that feels good to you. Picture what you'll look like at your ideal weight. Then look at that picture that you've created in your mind, maybe from different angles, different perspectives. Look at that daily. Maybe even visit that visualization at the beginning of the day, the end of the day. Two powerful ways to frame it. Write out your ideal body weight range. Write it. Remember the output channel. Focus on the body you want, your ideal weight range, your ideal body, your ideal body image. Remember we talked about that before. It has to be your body at ideal weight. You don't get to have Alicia Keys' body. It's your body at your ideal weight. Don't focus on losing weight. That's negative. Don't focus on fat thoughts like slow metabolism, hereditary body size, slow thyroid, the spirit of your great Aunt Sally that channeled the curse of large size. None of that. Look at and admire your body. Be grateful. Keep in mind the pictures you have of your ideal body, that ideal body image. When you eat, and this is so important, be entirely present to the act of eating and to your body. One of the things that I learned to ask, several hundred young women who I treated with eating disorders back in the day of being a shrink, for someone, for example, who was bulimic, I would ask her, at what point in engaging with food, do you feel different? 100% of them said, it's the instant before I take the bite that I feel relaxed. So in recognizing that, food was only a prop in a process and an unnecessary process at that. Being present to every bite became very, very important. So it was not a matter of willpower, it was just a matter of presence. Visualize the thoroughly chewed food assimilated throughout your body. It's going to be easier for broccoli than it is cheesecake with strawberry topping. Think and feel as though your desire for your ideal body and image is manifest. Create your body as your life intentionally. Remember the ABCs. Ask, believe, create. It's difficult to challenge long-held beliefs because they may be part of your identity. A vision, though, begins at the other end, the successful outcome. If somebody has a fear of success or a fear of failure, this vision process bypasses the fear and can etch the successful outcome. Here's a simple example. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, "Start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going." We do that every session of coaching with a client. What do you want to focus on? What would you like to get to and take away? So, this is important because looking at creating a vision creates neurochemical and neural pathway changes in your brain. When you repeat a vision, you etch it in your brain as a future memory, then it's a matter of backing into it. Look at that paper. I won't elaborate anymore, but look at that. It's actually a chapter from the book, Outsmart Your Brain, that's included in the workbook. So you don't make, here's the key, you don't make brain changes permanent unless you incorporate it in your story. Otherwise, it doesn't register or gets extruded as noise. And that's why I think 95% of people who diet gain back their weight, plus 2 or 3 pounds, they don't reprogram their body image. And we're going to return to that about how important the P of the roadmap is in our seminar next time. So the key elements, just simply put, repetition. The neural networks dedicated to your system, your vision, or your goal, or all of those, need to be renewed and repeated regularly or they'll be eliminated. Consciously incorporate this new vision into an ongoing story. First of all, so you'll know where you are in the process, but it'll be ultimately metabolized as part of yourself, the bedrock of identity, this new operating model. Be very specific about the experience of having achieved the goal. And again, as I mentioned and suggested, each of you write down the most important takeaway. Write this down. Write down your goal. Research on memory tells us a new idea or fact lasts about 40 seconds in short-term memory. Then it's gone, unless you write it down to review. Visualization crystallizes possibility into an articulated idea. The experience changes the brain. A vision serves as guide and inspiration to design ways to realize it, to live into it. This is a brief story to illustrate this. Major James Nesmith spent 7 years as a prisoner of war in North Vietnam. During the time he was imprisoned, he was essentially isolated and had no physical activity. He was in a cell except for 1 hour. Before the war, Major Nesmith was an average weekend golfer. He had broken 100 on 2 occasions. He had 299s. Everything else was triple digits. But to preserve his sanity, he decided to visualize golf. He would think about his favorite course, get ready, drive there, get out, smell the flowers, stretch, did all the things, hit a shot, walked in. He would spend basically 6 to 7 hours a day visualizing playing golf, 7 days a week for 7 years. When he was released from captivity, for his first outing, he shot a 74. It's the power of the vision, of mind over matters. So I want to just touch on the last steps here. They're important, but they already are things that you understand, so I just want to look at them in a more systematic way about mapping changes. 4, insight changes the brain. At the moment of insight, an aha experience, what we call in coaching, a complex new set of neural connections are created. If you take someone and hook them up to an fMRI, a video of the brain, during an aha moment, 3 different portions of their brain lights up when they have an aha moment, a creative thought, and that vaults them into a more synthetic and integrative and creative state of mind. Now, take the same person, the video of the brain, the fMRI, and give them a fact, an information, a command, or data. No, an order, or a suggestion from your repertoire of things you want to run in as play from being a mentor coach and restrain yourself. Nothing lights up. No part of the brain lights up. Now, as important as this insight-induced change in is, it's sustained attention that hardwires it into the brain's circuits. 5, take action. From Vincent van Gogh, I think I've included this in. If you hear a voice say, I'm not a painter, then by all means paint. Then that voice will be silenced. The world is not going to pay you for what you know. It's going to pay you for what you do. It rewards action. This is why a group, some of the brightest people anywhere with all kind of degrees can plan and figure something out, but struggle to make it happen. I know because I've been in such groups. Meanwhile, the guy who barely finished the first semester of community college owns a bunch of real estate on the west side of town. So the most important thing about having a goal is to act on it, to make a plan and to stick to it. Remember, you don't have to be motivated. You just need a plan and stick to it. Wisdom is to know the right path. Integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach to publish Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. 141 publishers turned down a guy with a really goofy and unlikely title for a book, Chicken Soup for the Soul. He decided to publish it himself, sell it out of the back of his car. So to get where you've never been, you may have to do what you've never done. So 6 is identity transformation. This is so important, we're going to spend most of our next seminar on this. A new experience or idea must be focused on consistently and frequently. When attention is consistent, brain circuitry is stabilized, the quantum Zeno effect. The mindset of identity then incorporates this new experience and integrates it as part of an evolving self, as a part of an identity, meaning simply a part of an operating model of how and who you are that can then begin to take on an automatic quality. Otherwise, if it's not integrated, it's prone to be dismissed or simply attributed to lack or to luck or circumstance, or just simply moving back to the more comfortable position of not changing. So here's a summary of steps 4 from last time and 5 from today. Decide what to change and map the changes. Since old patterns are hardwired, it takes consistency of focus on new experiences to change this wiring. Concentrate, and this is in your outline, concentrate on new behaviors, not on problems, in order to create new brain pathways. Identifying the problem won't solve it. Create new ways of thinking to eliminate brain circuits when the eye on the prize to lay new mental maps. Regulate states of mind and manage emotions to promote brain power. New insights and adaptations occur through balanced learning. Left brain and right brain combined, intellectual and emotional. Facilitate insight rather than following or giving advice. This is what creates foreclosure in the brain for you and for your client. The antithesis of that is simply to ask a question. Remember that the power is in the focus, that the permanent change will occur in a departure from and a consistent focus on new pathways, new experiences. Focus on successes rather than obstacles or non-performance. Focus aligns and directs energy and efforts. Emphasize positive, adaptive behavior and progress. Discourage attention to negative behavior or on problems. And this is where your permission to interrupt may be, well, you know, let me tell you about this problem. I want to interrupt for us to focus at this moment on the possibility or the challenge to look at what you can do. Knowledge is inert until it's activated. Put it into behavior. So, finally, think about your new experience and evolving self, how your new experiences require thinking of yourself and your identity in an evolving way. This is the evolution and the movement, the algorithms to think about in creating a new story that ultimately, when it's incorporated into your working model, it becomes identity, and that's what makes it permanent and not reverted back. So we have less time always than I had hoped. So I'm interested in thoughts or questions or clarifications. Remember to unmute star six or the unmute the mute button. Any clarifications or questions, and I'll respond unusually briefly to respect our time. From anyone?
Hey, this is Janet. I just wanted to say when you said about perfect practice makes perfection, I'm a musician and I remember teaching students and like, you guys are practicing your mistakes. You've got to change that.
Say it again, we're practicing in the state?
Yeah, they would practice their mistakes. So they would play a song and they would mess up a part and they'd go and play it again and they'd still mess it up and they'd play it again and mess it up. I'm like, you just cemented that into your brain.
Exactly. Exactly. This is, I mean, think about the elements, the system of deliberate practice that requires getting in a performance zone, in other words, booting up the right state of mind for a particular practice, doing the positive things and the skill development again and again so that it can become hardwired and natural, so that intuition can be used, because intuition is the unconscious operating outside awareness based on the mental representations and models someone has, a synthesis even of something new and different. So this is the key, and this is the key to performance neuroscience, is to engage that practice state of mind and do the positive things to develop skills and then find a way to sustain that and be able to enter that state of mind again for performance. And I want to end, I know I'm a minute over, but here's an example of where it's not easy to do that. I worked with an all-pro cornerback who, because football is episodic, it's not a flow like basketball. There's always downtime between every play. And especially if you're involved and you do good, you know, that tweaks your state of mind. If you have a bad play, that tweaks your. So every time it's important to get back into that performance state where all the practice is there and it can flow seamlessly. So every time, right before the play, the snap, he would immediately learn to say, he immediately said to himself, reset. That was the cue, the focus, the physiology, because it immediately booted up that mindset, that entire practiced area, so that it was automatic. And that is something that, you know, you'll see if you have a chance to look at the Master States of Mind, the illustration there. Thank you all for the comments, the questions. I appreciate it. And we'll pick up right here next time and add on the 15 minutes if you can, and be ready with any thoughts or questions or thank you for all the ones you've sent in and all the kind words. I appreciate it. Look forward to picking up with you here next time. See you guys. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.